Food Nation Radio Network with Elizabeth Doherty. This is not your typical food show. We're talking about the politics of food, the corruption of our food supply, and what you can do to stand and fight back. Now, once again, here's Elizabeth.
Hey, everybody, we're back. You're listening to Food Nation Radio Network. I'm Elizabeth Doherty. We have Courtney on the line from Non-GMO Project. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
What do you do there for them?
I am the assistant director of the Non-GMO Project, so I actually do a little bit of everything, but primarily work with companies that are verified to help them get the word out about their verification.
Okay, so when a company comes to you and they want to be verified, then you help them go through the process?
A little bit. First of all, I would talk a little bit more about the non-GMO project. So we offer North America's only third-party verification for non-GMO food and products. So companies come to us, they're interested in becoming non-GMO project verified, and we work with them every step along the way to help them achieve that.
How many products do you have that are non-GMO verified?
At this time, we have about 10,000 products that are non-GMO project verified. So we're working with about 800 companies overall.
And when you verify products, do you do it yourselves or you do it through a verification service, or how do you do that?
Well, basically, we work with companies, but we also do have a technical administrator that helps us work with companies as far as doing the testing of products. We work with labs who are testing. Basically, in our verification process, one of the key components of our process is testing. So any major GMO risk ingredients in a product have to be tested prior to use in the product. So, you know, companies that are verifying products need to make sure that they're working with a testing lab, and our technical administrator is the one that helps them through that process.
So Food Chain, who are those people?
So Food Chain Global Advisors are our technical administrators. Basically, just the easiest way to explain it is to walk it through, like if you were a company seeking verification for a product, so you would call us, we would answer any questions you have, basically give you any information that you would need about the process. And then at the point where you decide that you want to move forward with the verification process, you would be working directly with our technical administrator. They would be the ones to basically review all of your product information, your data, and then help you and ensure that you have the testing in place and the segregation and traceability in place as well that basically, you know, moves towards verification.
It sounds like a great service that you provide for people, because people really are trying to understand what's in the food they're eating, and they want to be able to rely on a source to let them know that the food that they're eating is not GMO.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge demand at this time. We see that certainly in the growth of sales of non-GMO project verified. But the reality is that for shoppers, you know, non-GMO claims are not regulated at all. And so that means that any company out there can be making a claim on their product saying that their product's GMO free. And, you know, the distinction of what the Non-GMO Project is doing is that we have a very rigorous process. We have a 36-page standard, which is available on our website. We have a comment period once a year where people can actually make comments on our standard if they feel like there's certain areas that need to be more rigorous. So what we're trying to do is, you know, create transparency for the consumer, because ultimately shoppers have a right to know what's in the food that they're eating and they're feeding to their families.
Recently, we came across a product called the Kumato that was developed by Syngenta. And I understand that it is non-GMO verified. Can you tell us about the process that they went through? Sunset, who is the grower that verified it with you, how they went through that process?
You know, I'm actually not familiar with that product, but what I can tell you is it would be similar to what I already outlined, that, you know, if there is a product that is verified, it would have to go through that complete process of making sure that there's testing if it's a risk ingredient. Right now, tomatoes are not considered to be a major GMO risk. You know, one of the first genetically modified organisms to be commercialized was the Flavor Saver tomato, and that was commercialized, I believe, in 1997. However, it was pulled from market, and that's no longer in the marketplace. So tomatoes are no longer considered to be a high GMO risk product, but that doesn't mean, I mean, we continue to do monitoring of all crops to make sure that we need to do testing or that we're doing testing where needed. But for that particular crop or for that particular product, we have to go through the exact same process of you know, looking at the supply chain, making sure there's no GMO risk ingredients. If there are, that there would have to be testing, and then, you know, ensuring that there's segregation and traceability in place.
You're listening to Food Nation Radio Network. I'm Elizabeth Doherty. We're talking with Courtney Pinot from the Non-GMO Project. It was a pretty interesting story about the Kumato because what they said was it was developed from a wild tomato in Spain, and we actually bought some, and the tomatoes seemed to last a particularly long time, and we were kind of wondering why they would do that. So we got an email from someone named Sandy Kepler at Food Chain, and she said that they were not tested for the verification process for the non-GMO project.
Right. So as I was saying, it is not considered to be a GMO risk. Now, the important thing, which is oftentimes a source of confusion for people, is that there is a difference between something that's hybridized and something that's genetically modified, right? So a genetically modified organism is going to be taking DNA from one species and inserting it into the DNA of another species. Whereas hybridization, you know, not to overly simplify it, it's going to be more of what you would think of as in terms of traditional, like, cross-pollination. Sometimes it happens in a laboratory, but it's not necessarily mixing DNA from one species into another species. It's not crossing the natural species barrier. So what this sounds like to me in this particular instance is that this is not a GMO. It's actually a tomato that's been developed through some type of process of hybridization, which is distinctly different.
How would you know?
Well, I mean, that's one of the things. That's why we work with our technical administrator, and they have a staff of scientists that they work with. And, you know, one of the key things that we do at the project is we have to have ongoing monitoring of what's happening in terms of GMOs that are being introduced into the marketplace. Certainly, as there's a lot of conversation out there when there's a new GMO being brought into the marketplace, hear about it through the FDA. So there's, you know, that information, it's not like something's just going to pop up in the marketplace. There is a process the companies have to go through before they commercialize a GMO.
I guess I'm just confused because the non-GMO project is something that consumers are supposed to be able to trust when they go into the grocery store and buy something and it's verified non-GMO. But I'm not seeing how it was verified in the case of the Kumato.
Well, so as I was saying, you know, there's kind of several steps in place. I mean, Food Chain Technical Advisors has a team of scientists, and one of the key things that they do is they monitor what GMOs are being brought into the marketplace. So we have, within our standard, we have the GMOs that we consider to be, you know, we know that are in the marketplace right now. So, for instance, corn and soy and canola and Hawaiian papaya, all of those, if there's a product which actually contains a high GMO risk ingredient, it has to be tested. In this situation right now, there are no approved tomatoes that are being commercialized in the United States right now. So we know that for a fact. So because of that, those tomatoes don't need to be tested. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not monitoring them and making sure that something's not slipping through somehow. In fact, one of the things that we do is we have ongoing surveillance testing that we do of all products that we verify to make sure that, you know, things are being adequately tested, that there's enough rigor in the process overall. But with the tomato, because there are no commercialized GMO tomatoes in the marketplace right now, and because this tomato is, it sounds like, a product of hybridization, it's not really relevant as far as being a, it's not a GMO tomato, is what I'm saying.
My concern is that because the tomato was developed outside of the United States and then brought inside the United States, and the way Syngenta has the growers sign very strict confidentiality agreements as to the growing of these tomatoes, that I would think a third-party verification service would be very important in this case. I don't know that you can just take the word of companies, particularly of companies like Syngenta, who are developing other products that people have problems with, and just basically take their word for it that this is not a GMO tomato.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think that ultimately it's one of the reasons that, you know, we maintain, we have this staff of scientists that are continuing to look at what's happening in terms of the development of GMOs so that we can see if there's any risks. Certainly there have been incidences of GMOs that have been in test plots where, you know, there's the potential like cross-contamination risk or something like that. So that's something that we continually monitor. So it's not so much that it's just taking the company's word for it, but it's also recognizing that there is a process as far as how these are introduced into the marketplace and, you know, what's being imported and the same way what's being exported. I mean, a great example is the recent contamination issue that happened in Oregon where they found GMO wheat growing in a field, and immediately there were, you know, markets throughout the world that shut down imports of GMO wheat and have ongoing testing of those. So there's kind of test points throughout, you know, when things are crossing borders.
Yeah, and this to me does not seem like an accident. I mean, this is not anywhere similar to the wheat in Oregon. This is something that was developed and had a laboratory name and then was given to very specific people with confidentiality agreements. Now that you're aware of the background, are you all going to test this tomato or are you not going to test it?
Well, I think it's, and I actually was, I believe I saw the email communication that came from Sandy Kepler.
Yes.
It's something that I certainly would look at again. And as I, you know, as I noted, right now with what we've been monitoring, we continue to stand in the space that tomatoes are not commercialized, GMO tomatoes are not commercialized in the United States right now.
In the United States.
In the United States, but I'm certainly open to going back to our team and seeing if it's something that they feel like there needs to be testing or further investigation. But at this point, I haven't seen anything that makes it a source of concern for us.
Do you think that non-GMO project has been duped by Syngenta?
Do I think that we've been duped? I don't see anything at this point that would, you know, provide evidence to that. I think that you know, our process is very rigorous. And certainly, if there was a concern, if you were coming to me as a consumer and you said, I have concern about this, then, you know, we certainly would investigate. And that is something that we do. We'll hear from consumers where they'll say, like, there's something that's come up and I want to know more information about it. And it's something that we're always open to exploring.
I do. I do have concern about this tomato because of the way that it does not degenerate in the way that other tomatoes that I buy, the greater sugar content, the manner in which they're marketing the product and the confidentiality and all these other factors. It just seems very odd to me. And I think this particular product should be tested. And quite frankly, I was surprised that it was not.
Well, I think the thing is, and it's an important just point of clarification, is that reality is that nowadays, even hybridization, you know, doesn't necessarily always happen in the field, that there are things that are being developed in a lab. They are not, you know, it's not necessarily a GMO, but they can be crossing, you know, different types of tomatoes. As you said, this sounds like this was developed from a wild tomato. The truth is I don't have enough information about the background on this particular case. What I do have the background is on is our process.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your honesty about that. And I'm just curious, how much does it cost to genetically test one of your products?
You know, it really depends on the type of testing. I don't have those exact numbers, but I know, like, for some products, I mean, it can be anywhere in the range of several hundred dollars. It probably depends on the product. But because our technical administrators are typically the ones that work with companies on that, and it depends on the type of test that's going to be applied and on the ingredients, I can't tell you specifically.
We're talking with Courtney Pinot from the Non-GMO Project. I appreciate your time. I hope you test the tomato because I really have relied upon Non-GMO Project as sort of a beacon of what to buy in the grocery store. And I have real concerns about that particular product.
Well, I'd be happy to follow up with our team and see kind of what their, you know, where they stand on it at this point, and if there's any other background information. And I'd also be happy to confirm with you, you know, what the process was, if we can actually get at that information of how it was developed. My gut sense is it probably was a process of hybridization, but I certainly can follow up with you so that you can share that with your listeners.
Sure. And my personal opinion is if you're labeling products as non-GMO, all of them should be tested. All of them.
Well,
there's no reason not. There's no reason not to.
Is that every ingredient that goes into a product?
No. When somebody gives you a piece of produce and says this is non-GMO, and you take their story about how it was raised out in the fields of Spain, I think it should be tested.
Right. Well, I understand that. I mean, like I said, there is a process that companies have to go through before introducing a new GMO into the marketplace, and that's something that we monitor very, very closely. We certainly monitor what's going on with the USDA and the FDA. So, you know, it would be a serious kind of almost like a fraud case to have a situation where somebody is covertly introducing a GMO into the marketplace. But like I said, I mean, I understand your concern. And as a, excuse me, as a shopper and consumer, I would take your suggestion the same way that I would anybody who submitted something to us. If there's a source of concern, then we are certainly always willing to investigate.
Well, the whole point of verifying GMOs is to avoid fraud. And all of these companies that import things from China and other places that say they're organic and everything else, the whole point of doing this is to avoid fraud and to make the consumer feel better about what they're buying. Well, we appreciate your time, Courtney from Non-GMO Project.
No problem. Take care.
I'm Elizabeth Doherty. You've been listening to Food Nation Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Did you miss any part of the show? Listen anytime at businesstalkradio.net and click podcasts. And be sure to follow Elizabeth on Twitter, keyword Food Nation Radio. Join us every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern for Food Nation Radio on the Business Talk Radio Network. This is the Food Nation Radio Network with Elizabeth Doherty.